my very special guest is Mary Byrne from Fans, the Fluoride Action Network New Zealand, which recently has had a number of success stories, including the removal of fluoride from the New Plymouth water supply in Taranaki, where Mary was allowed to go on to the breakfast program alongside a pro-fluoridation dentist. Meanwhile, behind them were images of somebody in a hazmat suit dumping the unpharmaceutical-graded fluoride into the water. And more recently, the city of Hamilton voted 7-1, I believe, against fluoridation in their particular water supply. This has resulted in a number of, in my professional opinion, propagandistic attacks by establishment media and official sources. And we've brought Mary on today to comment on this particular issue. Mary, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Vinny. It's good to be on the show.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while, actually.
Yeah. And in fact, the very reason why we're capable of recording this, and indeed the very reason why the Vinnie Eastwood Show has been recorded via Skype for all these years thus far, is in fact been due to a $20 donation by Mary herself so that I could purchase the program to do it. And thank you very much.
It's okay.
It is all your fault. So, let's get on with this. The first thing we wanted to discuss was a Sean Plunkett interview with Sir Peter Gluckman. Sorry, Professor Peter Gluckman. Could you please elaborate for the listeners just what was contained within this interview?
Okay, well, Professor Gluckman said that the science was settled and that it was well established that fluoride reduces dental decay, and there were absolutely no adverse health effects. I was appalled, really, listening to him, because the things he was saying were so out of date. It's just astounding that we can have the chief science advisor of the country coming out with such uneducated rubbish, basically.
And specifically, how did he go through this? I mean, are there any things that you could pick out in particular? Some of the words he said, the manipulations, things of that nature.
Well, the first one that comes to mind is that he said that okay, you know, fluoride might be toxic, but not at the levels that we're exposed to. However, he doesn't actually know the levels that we're exposed to, for starters. And secondly, there's really good research to show that the levels that we're exposed to could indeed be causing adverse health effects. For instance, the National Research Council was a 12-member panel that took 3 years to review all the science that there was on fluoride. They were looking, their purview was to look at fluorides in the water to see if their four part per million maximum level was safe or not. They concluded that wasn't safe, but they weren't allowed to say what level it should be lowered to. Now, these were doctors, dentists and scientists from both sides of the debate. They were like the top fluoride researchers from North America. And one of the things they found was that fluoride can affect the thyroid at very low levels. In fact, the levels that were associated with effects on the thyroid were 0.05 to 0.13 milligrams per kilo per day when iodine intake was adequate, and 0.01 to 0.03 milligrams per kilo per day when iodine intake was inadequate. Now, the thing is, what they've got here is the doses, whereas all we ever get from the pro-fluoride people is the dose that goes into the water, which is completely different than the dose a person is receiving. Now, if we look at these doses at 0.05 to 0.13 milligrams per kilo per day, and we compare them to what a baby is getting, then we will see that biofuel payments actually exceed that dose. So I calculated I got the average weight and the average fluid intake from Plunkett, and I calculated what their fluid intake would be and then what their dose of fluoride would be if they were consuming fluoridated water at 0.85 parts per million. Now, the newborn, they would be having a dose of 0.137 milligrams per kilo per day, and a six-month-old of 0.1 milligrams per kilo per day, which exceeds the dose that affects the thyroid of 0.05 to 0.13. So, and this is even iodine adequate. So here we go. We've got a really very sensitive endpoint, because the top science in the world is saying that this, that the dose, the concentration in the water is causing an effect on the thyroid. So it's causing bottle-fed babies to receive a dose that is likely to affect the thyroid. And even if we actually use that for adults, if you took an adult who weighed, say, 60 kilograms, and if they were to have a few litres of fluid a day, you know, so I know that I drink at least 2 litres a day because I take water to work, so I sort of have a good way of knowing how much water I have. So I take about 2 litres of water to work. I've already had a cup of coffee in the morning, and I have a couple of cups of tea in the evening. And then if I was to have, you know, curry or soup or anything like that, I'm probably quite easily getting, you know, say 4 litres. Now, 4 litres at 0.85, that would give me 3.4 milligrams a day. And then if you work that out, 3.4 divided by 60, that's 0.05. Yeah, see, that's 0.05 milligrams per kilo per day.
Rather significantly more than is required. And more to the point, it's not required at all. As Dr. Paul Connett has said, there is no function in the body for which fluoride is a requirement.
Well, that's exactly right. And even the fluoride, if they're omitting it. At the Hamilton Tribunal, we had, you know, Robin Wyman, one of the top fluoridation promoters, and he was saying, you know, there's no bodily requirement for it. But he says what happens is we consume the fluoride, some gets stored in our bones, some gets stored in our soft tissue, but a little bit comes out as saliva. And that little bit confers this topical benefit. But that is absolutely ridiculous, because what they're saying comes out, when we have non-fluoridated water, the amount of fluoride in our saliva is 0.006 part per million. But if you consume fluoridated water, then it increases it to 0.01 part per million. But if that could confer a topical benefit, then why is fluoridated toothpaste 1,000 parts per million? Because if 0.01 part per million works, then why don't they just give us 1 part per million or something in fluoridated toothpaste? Yet when Plunkett go and hand out free fluoridated toothpaste and toothbrushes, they use the adult strength fluoridated toothpaste of 1,000 parts per million, because they say the child strength at 400 parts per million doesn't work. They say it's not strong enough to confer a topical benefit. Yet we're supposed to believe that 0.01 part per million in our saliva is going to confer a topical benefit.
While it's washing down your throat at 100 miles an hour.
Well, yeah, because there's two mechanisms. See, one is this increase in your saliva to 0.01, and the other part is they say, you know, when you have a drink of water, 0.85 part per million in the water brushes past your teeth and gives you a topical benefit. I mean, both are just ludicrous. Both of them are ludicrous.
You know what's interesting is in the 7-minute interview that Gluckman conducted with Sean Plunkett, I believe Plunkett lives in Wellington where you are,
yeah.
There were so many lies told within this interview that it would take us about 8 hours to break down and explain each and every one of them to the audience. But for the sake of expediency, we just can't do that. This is the real problem, when you have a propaganda mechanism, which Plunkett is engaging in, what did he do? He called us fluoride nutters. And I want to move on from Gluckman's interview with Plunkett and go on to Plunkett's actual written submission as he posted online with Radio Live. I forget the title of it now. Something about fluoride nutters bite off more than they can chew, or yeah, something of that nature, which is full to the brim of just lie after lie after lie after insult after insult after insult after lie after lie after insult, and it infuriated me. And what occurred to me as really amusing at that point, when my rage was just about to burst some kind of bile duct in my esophagus, it occurred to me that he's right. Fluoridationists are so infuriating that they make people like us, who know the truth and know the facts, so enraged by the lies, so enraged by the insults, that often we lash out. And indeed, I have seen many debates upon Facebook and even comment sections on the Radio Live website, where people who are anti-fluoride will start, again, reverting to ad hominem attacks and rage spilling over, which these pro-fluoridationists then use against the movement, when their ignorance, stupidity, and scumbaggery was the very cause of the rage that was lashed out at them in the first place.
Yeah, well, what I find interesting is they will say, oh, you know, it's so insulting, you know, what you might be saying is so insulting and, oh, what's the other word they use? Threatening. That's right. They say, you know, it's threatening. But what they don't realise is them adding a poison to people's drinking water is very threatening behaviour. It's offensive and it's threatening. People feel threatened by them. When we were in Partia, there was a woman there who had a liver problem, and she'd been diagnosed because she was really sick, and she'd been told by her medical doctor there was nothing, you know, she could do. She had 80% liver function and, you know, oh, well, that's the way it was. But anyway, she got onto a really, really healthy diet and obviously, you know, cut out alcohol, et cetera. And she had really, really got herself quite well. And she had gone to the council saying, I cannot afford to have fluoride in my drinking water. Now, doesn't she have a right to feel threatened by that? It's her drinking water as well as anybody else's. And yet they seem to think that, you know, that no one should dare to say anything to them. But what they're doing should be criminal. It should be a crime to add dangerous chemicals to the drinking water.
It's like nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. You know, this is what it feels like to me, is that we're part of an Inquisition.
Yeah, yeah.
These people are the church. The church, the church of fluoridation. Give us money so we can poison you with it.
Oh, it's definitely that, because the whole thing is just based on belief. It's not based on the facts. You know, and like old Gluckman, you're meant to be the chief science advisor, and he's saying that you would have to drink, you know, 10,000 glasses of water a day to get toxicity, and, you know, you die of the water first. But, I mean, where has he been in the last 50 years? It's like saying you have to smoke 10,000 cigarettes in one day. Has he not heard of low-dose chronic poisoning? What do you reckon?
Exactly. And it's simply lies upon lies upon insult. And again, I can't stress this point, and I wish I could swear. In fact, I downloaded 10 commercial, oh, sorry, royalty-free bleeping sounds off of the internet, so that in case I do swear at some point, I can then play a bleeping sound. Because when this happens, it enrages me so that I can't actually contain myself. It makes me want to pick up this little phone here and just go, okay, I'm going to call up Sean Plunkett on Radio Live and just cuss him out on air. You, beep, 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 you know.
Well, I did ring him. I couldn't stand listening to him that whole day after the Hamilton council stop, and everybody that rang up, as soon as they said they were against fluoridation, he called them a nutter. and that was it. I mean, isn't that being nutty? That if somebody has a different point of view, that as soon as you find that out, you call them a nutcase? Isn't that nutty in itself? But anyway, I ended up, I rang him up and I called him a media bully, because that's basically what he's doing. You know, he's using his power of being behind that microphone and being able to broadcast out to thousands of people to ridicule and put down other people. And he doesn't even know them, and he won't listen to what they're saying.
This is the source of the frustration. I mean, if you were locked in a house with this person and you're trying to tell them, look, man, I'm sick, and they're saying, no, you're not sick, you're just an idiot, I'm not listening, you're just an idiot, you're not sick. How frustrated would you get? Would you want to kill that person? Or more to the point, would the thought of harming that person come across your mind? And of course, responsible people like ourselves, the thought might be there, but we'd never actually go through with it because that's a criminal act. And we're not criminals like them.
Yeah. I agree.
But again, if you have criminal tactics being employed against you, it seems that so many times the only thing that people get so frustrated with is that they become the very evil that they seek to fight against.
Yeah.
This is the difficulty.
Have you seen the article in the Herald today?
No.
Okay, so it's actually quite a big article, because when I put it into Word, it was like 6 pages.
Whoa.
And I have to admit it was balanced, you know, which means that I was still feeling a bit angry, but probably the pro-fluoride people were feeling angry too, you know what I mean? So it sort of had a bit of both. But that was, it's interesting that we haven't seemed to be able to get through to a lot of reporters that it doesn't work by swallowing, even though the pro-fluoride people are saying that. Do you know what I mean? It's like people just can't believe it because we've been told it for so long. And if that was true, you wouldn't put it in the drinking water, would you, if it didn't work by swallowing? So even though we actually had the pro-fluoride people saying it, like, for instance, Gregory Seymour, who's the dean of the Otago Dental School, he said to the Dunedin City Council in 2008, the primary benefit of fluoride is post-eruptive and topical, which means you have to have teeth in your mouth and it has to be applied to them. And then we have Robert Wyman. He was just in the Bay Buzz, which is, you know, hit my paper just a couple of months ago, saying the understanding of how fluoride now works is that the vast and predominant effect is a topical one. So when we go back to what Gottman was saying, he says, oh, it actually benefits the young and the old the most. But how can it benefit the young and the old the most when they are the ones that are less likely to have teeth?
Yeah, that was something one of the speakers at a recent Freeman's Bay fluoride meeting said, or rather had a picture of, is a picture of an elderly person holding a baby, and the baby's got a little speech bubble saying, something Peter Gluckman said was that it's very good for babies and the elderly when they don't have any teeth.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that the Hamilton Tribunal, there were 3 points that were agreed upon. So near the end of the tribunal, the councillors came back to both sides, because we had like primary presenters for both sides, and gave them a list of questions. And the first 3 questions were to try and find the common ground. So they asked, did we agree that fluoride worked topically? Did we agree that ingesting fluoride toothpaste is dangerous? And did we agree that there was no benefit to the pre-eruptive teeth by swallowing? So both sides agreed to all 3 questions. So we agreed that it works by applying it to your teeth. Not that I would actually advocate that, because, you know, it's a poison, so I'm not sure why you want to brush your teeth with it. But we agreed that there probably is a science that says it might reduce dental decay. We agreed that ingesting fluoride toothpaste was dangerous, and we agreed there's no benefit to swallowing fluoride to the pre-eruptive teeth. So therefore, there's no benefit to babies whatsoever. Now, aren't babies one of the most, you know, most vulnerable subsections of our community?
They are the ones that get thrown into the spotlight every single time the pro-fluoridationists come out, aren't they? Oh, somebody please think of the children, which we kill with fluoride.
Yeah. And so if there's no benefit to their pre-erupted teeth, and since there's no bodily requirement to fluoride, then all it is for babies is risk. There's absolutely no benefit. We're just giving them this dental medication because maybe it's going to reduce a little bit of dental decay in some other child, but we'll just give it to the babies anyway. Now, Philip Green-Jean, he was one of the co-authors of the Harvard study that was published last year in the Environmental Health Perspectives Journal, and he's had over 400 studies published. He's a really well-renowned scientist, and he says that fluoride seems to fit with lead, mercury, and other poisons that cause chemical brain drain. The effect of each toxicant may seem small, but the combined damage on a population scale can be serious. So isn't that more important than dental decay? Now the thing is, when people stop and listen to this topic properly, they agree. That's what happened in Hamilton, and that's what happened in New Plymouth and Central Hawke's Bay, where the councillors took the time to actually listen.
You know what the problem is with that phenomenon, Mary, yeah, is that the media were not present, and even if they were, they walked out early and certainly didn't broadcast the submissions in their entirety, so that the people in general, which the media could reach and could inform, were not.
I know. Well, the media has a lot to blame, don't they? Especially the Waikato Times. I mean, everything that's been in there, we've only been able to get one article that was anti-fluoride, that was an opinion piece that we gave to them. And that was by an oncologist who's practicing in Hamilton. When they finally published it, they put it on Friday, which I'm pretty sure is the least read paper of the week, and they had never put it online, whereas all of their other articles had been online. But no, they wouldn't put their one online, even though you would think that a lot of Hamiltonians would be interested to hear what an oncologist has to say about fluoride in the drinking water. But no, they wouldn't want people to hear that, would they?
Isn't it interesting that when a fact is produced that contradicts what the paper has previously published, they put it out as an opinion piece rather than just a piece?
Well, they were amazing, the Waikato Times, because the day after the councillors made the decision, they had a big headline that said, "Council got it wrong." Now, how did they know council got it wrong? They didn't sit there for 4 days. As you say, none of these media people actually sit through all of this information. And the Waikato Times were hardly there at all.
It's because they don't care. And they're boring, stupid people. Okay, all right. Let me just explain something to anybody who's listening here who thinks that the media are populated by intelligent, researching, credible people. They're not, okay? They are absolutely dumb. Just believe me. I have spoken to a number of them. I have even spoken to a number of credible journalists, award-winning journalists, who tell me the same thing. The vast majority of these people are frickin' stupid. Not only are they stupid, but they're apathetic and they don't care. In fact, I was approached by somebody who used to be in the media to go work for her because she couldn't find anybody who cared about political issues enough to even go to any political meetings and film them at all.
Oh my God.
Okay. And to give an example of just the kind of media bias, on the 6th of June, and I believe this was the day that the big announcement that Hamilton had removed fluoride from the water, these are the headlines from TVNZ, and I'm just going to read them out. At 8:09 a.m, experts disappointed by Hamilton fluoride removal. At 12:10 p.m, health experts slam Hamilton's fluoride decision. At 6:24 p.m, fluoride in drinking water helps protect teeth, experts. At 7:29 a.m. on the same day, Hamilton fluoride decision slammed by doctors. at 10:40 a.m. the same day. Expert disappointed by fluoride decision. I put this picture, the snapshot that I have of this, up on my Facebook status and said, nah, the mainstream media aren't biased in favour of fluoride, bro.
Well, actually, I rang up the editor of the Waikato Times the other day because they had a headline that said Hamiltonians will have their say on fluoride. And then I read the article and it said that the Hamilton City Councillors will discuss whether or not they'll discuss having a referendum, basically, right? So it didn't say that Hamiltonians will have a say. And it also, you know, of course, people don't even seem to realise that Hamiltonians did already have a say by the whole tribunal process because everybody was invited to put in a submission. And 1,577 people did put in a submission and 134 people went and spoke to their submission. So it wasn't as if Hamiltonians haven't had a say, and for one thing. But secondly, the headline was reading as if there was going to be a referendum. So I rang him up and I said, look, it's really like this is the last straw because, you know, in these, how many, three or four weeks now since the tribunal, every single article has been pro-fluoride bar that one that I was telling you about. And I said, you know, you put it on a Friday when it's the least read paper of the week. And he said, he jumped down my throat and said, so you're saying this is a conspiracy theory, is it? I said, I didn't talk about any conspiracy. I just said some facts. The facts were this is the only anti-fluoride article in the last 4 weeks and that you printed it on a Friday, which is the least read paper of the day. And then I went to say, and you haven't put it online, but then he cut me off again. So as soon as I said the facts to him, I was suddenly a conspiracy theorist.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If the facts point towards a conspiracy, there is no other logical conclusion, is there, Mary?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. So, you know, if he has conspired, I don't know, did he just make up his mind himself that he would just only print pro-fluoride articles? I don't really care if he made up his mind by himself or whether he talked with someone else and whether they talked in secret or not, because it's pretty obvious what they've done. Mm. You know, they've been completely and utterly biased. So it's not really that much of a conspiracy, so it's kind of out there, isn't it? It's kind of out there for all to see that there's something going on about them printing only pro-fluoride things in 4 weeks. I mean to say, and that be the only article that they haven't put online was the one that was anti-fluoride. God.
No, you're either in my opinion, the world is split into two types of people, and everybody has one of these. Oh, there's only two types of people. Mine is you're either a conspiracy theorist, which means you believe that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to maintain or grow their influence, or you're a coincidence theorist who thinks everything happens by sheer coincidence. There's no such thing as lies. There's no such thing as backroom deals. There's no such thing as collusion. And there's no law against conspiracy. Oh, wait a second. There is a law against conspiracy, isn't there, Mary? Are there laws against leprechauns? Oh, no, there aren't. You know why there aren't laws against leprechauns? Because they don't frickin' exist! And you know why there are laws against conspiracy? Because they happen all the time!
I know. I mean, it's pretty sort of Pollyanna-ish, isn't it? To think that nobody ever has a secret conversation with somebody else about what they're going to do. And I mean, that's all a conspiracy is, isn't it?
Well, you know, the technical definition... conversations. The technical definition is two or more people coming together to cause harm on another group of people without that group of people knowing about it. So,
there you go.
Yeah, I mean, technically, what we're engaged in right here is a conversation where we're trying to do harm to the liars and thieves and scumbaggery individuals who are promoting fluoride. So, technically, by the very definition, we're actually engaged in a conspiratorial conversation right now because we're colluding together, all right? That's what the word means. Conspire is the opposite of respire, right? It means to breathe together in the original Latin.
Oh, I thought it had to be secret as well.
Well, without those other people knowing about it, sure. But, of course, we haven't sent out emails to all these people asking them to come on this particular broadcast right here at this point. So because we're doing it and recording it without their knowledge and then releasing it, it's a conspiracy until such point as it actually gets released and is in full knowledge.
Oh, okay.
Right, so conspiracies happen all the time. Right, and it's often just a matter of timing. And to be called a conspiracy theorist to me is very insulting when it's being said by somebody who thinks that a conspiracy theorist is a bad thing. Personally, I think that conspiracy theorists are in general highly intelligent, very brave to face the enormity of rejection and resistance that the rest of society, who are a bunch of, you know, I don't want to insult the entirety of society, but I'm going to anyway. You're a bunch of morons and you're brainwashed, all right? It's not my fault. It's not my fault that that's what you are. Don't call me a conspiracy theorist just because you're brainwashed, all right?
Actually, in the Herald today, Councillor McPherson said, you know, one of the things that the councillors were really annoyed about was some of the DHB people got up and called, you know, our side, you know, pseudoscience and quackery, et cetera. And he said, for them to say that, they must think the councillors are morons. You know, they're treating the councillors as if they're all stupid, aren't they? The way, you know, Sean Plunkett and everybody, because these, you know, these councillors in Hamilton and in New Plymouth in particular, because that's one that heard the most, they're saying that they're all completely stupid, that they've all been, you know, suckered in or something. You know, so it's really insulting, isn't it?
If you're a conspirer, you must call the people who are exposing you conspiracy theorists, because then nobody listens to them because they're conspiracy theorists. If you are a liar, call the people who are exposing you as such liars, because then everybody, because then, you know, you see what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
If you're a nutter and a moron and you're pro fluoride, obviously, what do you call everybody who's anti fluoride? A nutter and a moron.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and also it's what they've been reduced to, isn't it? Because they won't stick to the facts. They won't argue any of the facts.
Well, they're getting emotionally involved in the issue, and I can resonate with that. I can understand that the fluoridation issue does bring out emotion. Emotion, however, is the antithesis of reason. Is it not? And if we are trying to institute public health policy, do we wish for people's health to be dictated by our emotions or by our evidence and ability to reason?
Yeah.
The answer is very obvious, I think. Yeah. And it is not fair that I have to go down to the organic shop and pay $25 a week to have water for me and my girlfriend just to drink. You know, we can't afford to have enough water to cook our pasta or to bathe in and things of that nature, because I don't want the fluoride, I don't want the chlorine, I would rather have ozone being used to purify the water. I don't know what kind of heavy metals are in there and that kind of thing. But the fact of the matter is I don't have a choice, because I won't be listened to and I'll be called a conspiracy theorist if I go and try and do anything about it. And what I applaud you for, Mary, and fans, and all of the distinguished submitters that have come forth for this cause, including Professor Paul Connett, is that you have braved the fire and the bullets and the blades of this name-calling, of this abuse, of this demonization. Despite all of that, you have come through with success after success after success.
Well, you know, the Hamilton Tribunal did actually restore my faith in human beings, because I was getting quite depressed at times, thinking that people were brainwashed. You know, I was wondering if I still do wonder, are we living in a Stephen King novel, you know? That, you know, there's something in the water that's making people apathetic, and then because they're apathetic, they won't do anything about what's in the water. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It feels like a Stephen King novel. And that also that people are so brainwashed that it just seems so hard to get through. But, you know, like this thing, I've talked to so many reporters in the last 4 weeks, and I've explained to them time and again how it does not work by swallowing. Even the pro-fluoride people say it, and yet they'll still write an article as if it works by swallowing. But anyway, it actually did restore some of my faith in human beings, because these councillors listened and they took it in. You know what I mean? They're not that brainwashed and they weren't stupid. And they took it in and they could see that it was obvious. It was obvious once they got past the media. You know what I mean? Because we were in a room where the media had no influence. It was just the facts being laid out. They could discern it. They could figure out that this is a ridiculous idea, putting this toxic chemical into the drinking water, supposedly to reduce dental decay, when it doesn't work by swallowing. You know what I mean? I mean, how crazy can it get? It's one of the craziest things, isn't it? You know what I mean? At least maybe some of the other arguments aren't quite so crazy. Do you know what I mean? Like, even though there's other things I don't agree with in that, they're perhaps not quite as crazy as this one. I mean, how can anybody believe this? That you put this, they even had the guy from ESR about the poisons, and he showed the big drum of hydrofluorosilicic acid, and he goes, yep, you know, as you've heard, you know, from our side, well, it is produced by the manufacturer of the phosphate fertilizer, and then we put it in the drinking water, and it is hazardous and corrosive, and it is poisonous, but it's not, what do you say? But it's not poisonous when it comes out your tap. It is poisonous when it goes in, but it's not poisonous when it goes out. And it's like, what? And then he says, so how can I explain how it, like, disappears by the time it comes out your tank? Well, what happens is the hydrofluorosilic acid disassociates and you're just left with the free fluoride ion. That's what comes out your tank. But, I mean, the free fluoride ion is a poisonous substance anyway. So...
One of the questions, Mary, that I get asked a lot, is why would people do this intentionally? Why would they poison people? And I can't understand it. That doesn't make any sense. And I say, you're right, it doesn't make sense. You know why? They're like, why? It's because you're a sane, reasonable person. Imagine for a moment that you're a complete psychopathic killer. It would suddenly make a hell of a lot of sense to you, wouldn't it?
But, I mean, they can't all be psychopathic killers, you know what I mean? They can't be.
Oh, yeah, but they're the only ones for whom it makes total sense to, being in full possession of the facts.
Yeah, but then what about the pro-fluoride people that were at the tribunal? You know, like the chief on health advisor, Robin Wyman, for one. You know, he's there standing up saying, you know, that it's only this little bit coming out your saliva, and yes, it does accumulate in your bones and your soft tissue. I didn't used to admit that. So he's even admitting it accumulates in your soft tissue. I mean, I have wondered if, you know, see, part of the problem will be for them is that it's their jobs. And it's not always that easy to throw your job away. You know, and some people can feel that pressure more than others and are less likely to take the risk of losing their job than other people. So, I would say there's a thing about it being their job. There would be a thing about loyalty, because I've started to think that there's a lot of people who are more interested in loyalty than they are about the truth. And I think it's because they don't want their worldview questioned. Because if we, well, actually, Sean Plunkett, did really allude to this, because he said, the thing that worries me about this fluoride issue is if people stop believing in fluoridation, then what else will they stop believing in?
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing that would be really threatening is if people didn't believe what the government was telling them.
Yeah.
DDT is safe, vaccines are good for you, chemotherapy saves lives, Auckland transport issues will be solved at some point. You know, imagine, just imagine.
Exactly. People might question everything. They might say, oh, do children even need to go to school? I'm not sure. I don't really have too much of a viewpoint on that.
Here's the thing. Sean Plunkett, as a journalist, and in my opinion, being a pseudo-journalist, meaning I actually do journalism, but I don't have a degree, and that's the reason I can actually do real journalism, is that your job is to ask questions. And his main point about fluoride is that he doesn't want anybody to be questioning.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Now, back to the point about psychopaths and these people you submitted, who obviously, you know, probably weren't psychopaths, just brainwashed, right? Anybody can be brainwashed, but not everybody can be a psychopath. Apparently, it's between 1% and 4% of the population. The American Medical Association says that when you meet a psychopath, often they are smiling, enchanting people who don't really have a whole lot of depth to their character at the end of it, and don't have a whole lot of long-lasting relationships, and don't really care about anybody other than themselves. And that's in general the kind of people that you will meet who are psychopaths. And when I first read that in the American Medical Journal, it freaked me out, because it reminded me of almost every single employer I'd ever had in my life. And incidentally, there are three industries, where these types of people tend to accumulate. In centres where there is power and control involved, because that is the only thing that they want. And the three industries are business, media, and politics.
Oh, media.
What do you think would be the three pillars that are the most influential and controlling in society? It would be those three, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So is it any wonder that we live in a crazy, crazy world run by crazy, crazy people who have all the powerful positions?
Yeah. But, you know, something I've wondered is, had some of them wanted, like the councillors, to stop fluoridation, but they can't come out and say it? Because if they're standing there saying things like, well, you know, it will accumulate, does accumulate in our bones, it does accumulate in our soft tissue, and we've got this tiny little bit coming in our saliva, and it only works by a topical benefit. Do you think they're trying to, like, give the councillors a hint? Do you know what I mean? Do you think that maybe they might be getting to the stage of, like, they actually know, but they don't want to say it because they'll lose their job and they'll lose their standing, you know, with all their friends and that sort of thing. But they want the councillors to kind of get the idea that, hello, you know what I mean? Maybe it's not a good idea if it doesn't even work by swallowing, then it's accumulating in your bones and your soft tissue. Because how much more blatant can it be? I mean, wouldn't you have to? It's just about banging someone over the head, isn't it? If you say that, they still don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, this is why I developed employophobia, fear of being employed. Because when you are employed and you're being paid to do something, it restricts your choices of what you can say and what you can do. And that's why I'm currently not employed by any particular organization. And this is why I ask for donations in order to keep my operation going, to simply serve the public, because I know that no organization currently exists, not in this country anyway, that has the resources and the capital to basically spill the truth out as much as it need be. And what was interesting is that when you're employed, and I noticed this, if I admitted that I was wrong to customers, for instance, I would be chastised and have my job threatened by my employers. But just recently, on my radio show, I brought on a person who told some half-truths, misinformation about one of my other regular guests. And the other regular guest was incredibly furious with me.
Oh.
And I admitted to him that I was wrong. I admitted to my audience that I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And do you know how chastised I got for admitting that I was wrong? None. None whatsoever. I was actually praised by people for being so honest and so upfront.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This is the difference.
Yeah.
And this is what I crave, is because those for whom truth is their commodity are never afraid to admit when they're wrong, as long as it's the truth.
Yeah. Well, I mean, John Kalhurgis is out in New Zealand shining his example on the fluoridation issue, isn't he?
Exactly.
You know? I mean, he was the head of the fluoridation promotion working group when he came out and said that fluoridation didn't work and it's probably harming people. So it's incredible that we still have fluoridation 30 years on, 30 years on after he was saying that. And he was the top fluoridation promoter in the country.
Well, thanks to people like yourself, Mary, there's at least two towns, large towns in New Zealand that now no longer have fluoride in their water. Yeah. And it occurs to me that the lesson of history is that, as Sean Plunkett said, it's only a small contingent of people who come out and say these kind of things. When the frack in all of history have the majority of people been right about anything? In fact, it has normally been a small, determined minority that have been correct and trying to show people the way of the future, of truth.
You know that we're down to 48% of the population fluoridated now?
Less than half?
Less than half, yeah, that's right. And then there'll be, you know, there's a whole lot of people who are going and buying their own fluoridated water, or in Wellington they're coming out to Petone and getting their own fluoridated water. So, you know, we're making progress that way. But you do know that the Hamilton City Council may go back to a referendum. Do you know that?
They may. And this is the thing. It's like one step forward, two step backwards. And what really frustrated me upon hearing the announcement is that people, despite having this great example to point to, that is incredibly encouraging. They say all over Facebook and they say all over the comment sections, there's no point in trying, they'll just fluoridate it anyway, they'll just fluoridate it anyway. Well, of course they will, if you sit back and say they're going to do it anyway,
yeah,
you frickin' idiot. Okay? Yeah. Now is when the iron is hot. Now is when the time has come to strike, to get off your asses and contribute to the fight.
Definitely, because this is, you know, this is one thing and a whole lot of things, as we both know. There's a whole lot of issues that are going on, and this is one issue, and I think that it helps to bring people in to learning about a lot of other issues. So, and I think that it makes people think about, well, what is going on if they can make such a big mistake as putting the toxic chemical in their drinking water. It gets people questioning. See, in some ways, you know, I'm surprised that they don't just try and turn it off, because the longer they leave it, the more people they've got questioning, and the more people it's sort of waking up from the slumber, because this one is so obvious, you know. But, it's not over with the Hamilton City Councillors anyway. It's just that there's a councillor, Wilson, who is on the DHB, and because he was on the DHB, him and two others were given legal advice not to partake with the tribunal. So now he's come out and said he wants to have a referendum, and he's gone and got about 2,000 signatures. That forced the councillors that they have to talk about it. So they're going to be discussing on Friday, and they'll be deciding one way or the other. The other councillors are split. They're all angry with him. They're all angry with this Wilson because, you know, he didn't sit through the tribunal. So he doesn't know why they came to the decision that they did. He could have actually sat there and listened if he'd wanted to be informed, but I doubt that he definitely wasn't there, and I doubt he did watch it on his TV or laptop or whatever. So they're now split, though, because some of them think if they don't go for a referendum, they're going to have this guy pulling them down all the way up to the elections, and they'll have no sort of control over what the media can do. Because apparently if there was a referendum, there's more sort of rules that come into place, and the paper would be forced to be more neutral than what it is. Whereas at the moment, the council can't, you know, impose anything on the Waikato Times. So there's one school of thought like that, and the other school of thought is, no, they went through a really robust decision-making process, which is actually the process that was advocated by Gluckman's office, the chief science advisor. They had written to him, and he had said to use that process, because that was the process that the New Plymouth District Council used, and they used it because ESR had said to them to use it because of a report that was commissioned by a woman called Wynne Stanley for the Ministry of Health. So that was kind of like the official way to do it, was this tribunal. So they had done every single thing right, and they gave everybody the same opportunity. You know, nobody was allowed to talk over their allotted time. Nothing went wrong. And yet this guy, Wilson, is out there, like, destroying things. You know what I mean? He's obviously got no respect for any of the councillors, the whole democratic process. He had even voted for the tribunal process. He's just done it purely and simply so he could get votes.
Do you remember when you were a child, Mary, if you did something really stupid, you got cracked over the back of the head and ow! You know, it's not meant to hurt you. It's just meant to let you know that you're a freaking idiot. And this is something I believe should be employed in political chambers, chambers of commerce, the business roundtable. Somebody says something ridiculously stupid, like we're going to help the economy and improve jobs by getting the country into massive amounts of debt. Whoosh, ow! Right, I'm sorry. Right, this is something that should be employed. Okay, it should be policy. And speaking of policy, it's back on Sean Plunkett. Has he ever been to Europe, I wonder? And while he was in Europe, was he walking around in Berlin, Gay Paris, or Moscow, or any of these other wonderful, advanced, and cultured cities, thinking to himself, man, they're all fluoride nutters. None of them want fluoride in the water. You know, Kerry Woodham, I called up Kerry Woodham, and she said, well, look at what happens to the teeth of people who don't have fluoride in the water. And I went, what, like Europe?
Yeah.
The whole continent?
Yeah. No, it's so ignorant, isn't it?
They're just so dumb. And it's like over-educated. It's like they've been educated to the point where ignorance is the standard. It's like they've got a bachelor's in stupidity, okay? And they're very proud of it, and they're still paying off the debt.
Yeah, that's right. So Anna Goodwin, the oncologist, she was on national radio the other day. Did you hear that?
No.
She was on the Jim Mora show, and the other two panellists that he had that afternoon were Brian Edwards and Michelle Bogue. You know, that she was that National Party, what do you call it, coordinators or something? You know what I mean by National Party?
Stooge, trollop, what?
Campaign
manager, campaign National Party manager. President.
That, she was either National Party president or National Party campaign manager. But she was definitely part of the National Party. I can remember her a few years ago. And we all know who Brian Edwards is. And anyway, so Brian Edwards was really good, and he said that, you know, it's a personal choice, and that it's outrageous that a medication should be put in the drinking water. But Michelle Bode, she just about had a fit, sort of yelling down at Anna Goodwin, that where's the proof? Where's the proof? Show me the proof. Show me someone who's been harmed by fluoride. But the thing is when we do show them someone who's been harmed by fluoride, they say, oh, that's just anecdotal. You can't prove it. There's a man in Lower Hutt called Stephen Hiscock, and he was sick for about 5 years, I think. And he finally twigged on that it was fluoride, started getting his water from potassium, unfluorinated, and he's become well again. But we went to the Hutt City Council, and there was a medical officer of health there called Stephen Palmer. And when Stephen Palmer got up after Stephen Hiscock, he says, oh, well, you know, a lot of these things can be in people's head, you know. That's what he said to the councillors about Stephen Hiscock, telling them his story about having been sick for so long, you know. And this is what happens. They just deny it anyway. So I did see Michelle Bogue, Stephen Hiscock stories, because that was actually in the Herald on Sunday, a couple of months ago, and a whole lot of other stuff, you know. But whether or not she'll read it.
They won't, and this is part of the cognitive dissonance. I remember when I used to suffer from cognitive dissonance when I was learning things about the world. I learned that the police weren't honest people in one of the worst possible ways you could imagine, and that was really tough to deal with, and many other things that I'd previously held believer. Like, Mary, I don't know about you, but I used to be a big establishment supporter. I loved it. I thought the police were honest. I thought the politicians told the truth. I thought that health policy actually saved more lives than it killed.
Oh, yeah.
And to get over it was like, for the first time in my life, admitting that I don't know everything, more to the point, admitting not only to myself, but to everybody else, that I really didn't know anything, and that all my opinions were based on BS. And there were many times when I'd, you know, been like in the fetal position, you know, I'd cried, I'd rage fits and so on and so forth, until I got over myself, essentially. And that's what these people have to do as well. Getting over cognitive dissonance is really about getting over yourself.
Yeah, I think it's like growing up. It's a part of that growing up process. Because I think it's like, you know, when you're a kid and you think, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to do this and do that and I'm going to live happily ever after sort of thing. You know, I used to think, you know, as a child, you know, I would grow up, you know, and there would be this magical age and then I would live happily ever after from then on. Do you know what I mean? And then you grow up and you realise that life isn't that easy. You don't become an adult and everything's easy and like Mary Poppins or something, you know, that there's always challenges. You know, no matter how old you are, there's always challenges. And so then I think the other part is realising the sort of things you're saying is that's another part of growing up, when we realise these institutions aren't like we thought that they were. But when you still believe that, yeah, everybody's honest and everybody, you know, the Ministry of Health are there to help us and nobody ever lies and all the rest of it. It's living in a child's world, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Grow the frack up.
Yeah.
I mean, can it not be put in simpler terms than that? If you're pro-fluoride, you're still a child and you need to grow up. Okay, I'm sorry. The truth hurts. Trust me. I know. I've heard a lot of truth in my life. And it really, really, really does hurt. So if you feel angry or in some sense aflamed or enraged by the statement, that's good. Because at some base level, you're getting it.
When I very first heard that there could be something wrong with fluoride was probably when John Calhoun was around. You know, it was probably the early 80s. And I was only quite young, in my teens. So I wasn't really that interested, but I'd sort of heard that there was something going on. And then I remember reading this headline on the Dominion, I would have been the Evening Post, and it said, Ministry of Health says fluoridation is safe. And I thought, oh, thank goodness for that. Oh, that, you know, that makes me feel better. Because I didn't want to believe that the Ministry of Health could be wrong. Because even then I realised if they were wrong about that, that's a really serious thing that they're wrong about. You can't afford to be wrong about adding a medication to a drinking water. So, but the thing was I thought that because it was in the newspaper and because the Ministry of Health said it, I thought that meant it was the truth. And I think there must be a whole lot of other people that are still like that. But I was only like 17 or something, so I could kind of forgive myself, you know, for being so naive. Shouldn't be thinking that, you know, when you're an adult.
Mm. You know, it's a sad state of affairs when those who are the least intelligent and the most brainwashed are the ones who have the most sway on the airwaves. But here's the thing, and just use myself as an example here. I can't really think of any other examples off the top of my head. I've got more subscribers to my YouTube channel than the New Zealand Herald does.
That's amazing, eh?
More than TV3 News. Wow. More than John Campbell. More than every single mainstream media news outlet that has a YouTube channel in this country.
Wow.
More than all the radio stations. More than all the TV shows. More than entire channels. You know how I can do that? It's because I don't give up. I don't listen to people who tell me that I'm wrong and have no evidence. I'll hear them, but I don't listen because I know. I don't just feel. I know because I've seen the documents that they're wrong and they're talking out of their ass. And I think that I'm one of a growing minority who understands unequivocally that we as a society have been lied to for a very long time, and that to educate ourselves is not only to ingest more information, it's actually to override and let go of all the lies that trickle down like fluoridated water.
So true.
Well, thank you, Mary, for this topical discussion. No pun intended. And do you have any final statements?
Well, I think actually just going back to what you've said is that one of my favourite singer-songwriters over the years has been Billy Bray, an English folk political singer, and he had a good quote, which was the worst things that we're suffering now is cynicism and apathy. You know, and that is really what the problem is. You know, because if people weren't so cynical, I mean, mind you, I can understand it. It's not like I can't understand why people are cynical. I definitely understand it. And so apathetic, we wouldn't have fluoridation and we wouldn't have a whole lot of other things going on. But people feel like they can't be bothered because what's the use? They don't listen. And you're cynical about them. But if we could get over those two things, the cynicism and the apathy, then I think that's the way forward, you know, because there's more of us than them. There's much more of us. Did you see that thing in Stuff yesterday? And it was about this questionnaire they were giving these people about redundancy at the Department of Conservation. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, my God, it's just outrageous. There's some psychoanalysis or something, and it's this questionnaire, and it has questions like, so they're looking at making people redundant, right? So they had 140 people and they want to make 70 redundant. And part of, you know, sifting out who they wanted was this questionnaire with about 100 questions. And they had things like, do you like opera? Do you think that the universe is all-knowing? do you suffer from indigestion? And what on earth have these things got to do with their job? Absolutely nothing. And then, like someone was saying from the union or something, you know, like, why would liking opera mean that you were good at your job as a safety person or whatever? And she said, but then maybe that wasn't the right answer. Maybe the right answer was, if you liked opera, you see, maybe you were seen as elitist or something. But the thing was, is that only one person decided just to resign and not do it. But why didn't everybody just say, I'm not doing this survey? No way. If they all just said they weren't doing it, then they wouldn't have been able to voice that on them. But people didn't realise their power and the numbers. They all got scared of their jobs and they all went and did it. You know what I mean? But if everybody just realised the power of numbers, they could have all just said, no way, we're not doing that.
You know, Mary, I hear what you're saying, but I disagree to an extent. Because yeah. I believe power is not necessarily in numbers, unless the numbers are small. It wasn't the majority of Hamiltonians that turned out and did submissions. Less than 2,000 people, right? And less than 200 people actually giving voice submissions.
Yeah.
It's not currently millions of New Zealanders that are currently in Parliament controlling the gears and working the levers like the Wizard of Oz, is it? It's a little over 100 people, isn't it? People don't need to necessarily know the power of numbers. People need to know the power of the individual. Now, in terms of those, that one individual who quit, that's the only one individual that really mattered in that company. All of the rest of them, they went into public school from day one, and we're told that they're very special, and incidentally also told to obey authority figures without question.
Why do you
think they call it psychoanalysis? You know, it's because you're being analyzed by psychos, you know. And you know, why do you think they call it the criminal justice system?
Yeah.
Because it's just criminal. You know, you can't be apathetic without being pathetic. You can't be cynical without being a sinner.
Yeah.
But hey, as the Terminator said in Terminator 3, your levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear of death.
True. Okay, buddy.
Mary Byrne from fans.org.nz. That's fanz.org.nz. Is that the actual correct website? Because I've gotten that wrong.
That's right.
Okay, good. Otherwise, I'd have kicked myself rather hard. Mary.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, buddy.
I applaud everything that you do.
Likewise.
And I can't wait until you're until the great all-seeing eye of Sauron, known as fans.org.nz, points its steely gaze towards Auckland to get the frickin' fluoride out of my water. But I'm not going to allow you to fight this fight alone. That's why we're doing this.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of Aucklanders getting involved, actually.
Exactly.
It's really good.
All right, and you know, you need to foster these kind of movements, allow them to grow organically, and to not let apathy and cynicism take over. Because, you know, I don't know about you, but I got teased a lot in high school, and trust me, it can make you hate everybody else. Right?
Well, they Aucklanders did really well last week with organising the doctors and dentists event at Freeman's Bay. You know, they got out there on the sides of the street handing out, you know, thousands of flyers and things. They did a lot of work to get that going. So that was excellent. You know, they definitely weren't suffering from cynicism or apathy.
Exactly. All right.
Okay, I'll see you later then.
Thank you, Mary.
Okay, bye-bye.